Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart, and this is my full interview with Owen Byrne. Owen is the man who built the first version of Digg. You know Digg, right? The site that went from nothing to become one of the most successful companies on the internet. Well, there are a lot of myths, a lot of legends about how that business was built. Owen came here to Mixergy to talk about the truth, how it was really built. And you know what? If you fall for the myths, you're going to take your business and your life in the wrong direction. If you hear the truth, you're going to learn ideas that you can use to build your business. And I got to tell you, having heard this interview, having done this interview and heard directly from Owen what it was like to build up Digg, it's still an exciting, motivating story, and you can learn a lot from it. So I hope that you get as much out of it as I got out of it when I recorded it. Owen today is a senior manager at TravelPod Labs, which is a TripAdvisor company. As I say in this interview, we dispel myths. We talk about the one clause that he wishes he had in his contract with Digg, and we talk about how they built the business, how they came up with the idea, what they tried before, and how it all evolved. Here's my interview with Owen. Hey. I hear you created Digg for a few $100 for Kevin Rose. I've got a few $1,000s. Will you build me the next hot internet site?
Well, first of all, it was more than a few $100s. That was mostly a PR fabrication.
What? Really Wait a minute. A PR fabrication in business?
Yeah.
The business news doesn't report the truth? We're all banking on this. We're building our business based on what we're reading.
Oh, well, I don't believe everything you read, especially if it comes from Silicon Valley blogs.
All right. Well, I don't know what we're doing here. I thought we were going to teach people how to build a site for a few $100 and make millions of dollars. All right. I don't mean to interrupt
you. I think it's
you.
Still so possible. I mean, it was financed out of Kevin's savings, so it is possible to actually build a successful blog. It just costs a little more than that. There's a little more risk than just a couple $100.
Okay, and so it is an inspiring story, and I don't want to take away the inspiration. I want to make sure that we get to that inspiring story, but I also want to put in some reality so that guys like me who are trying to build internet companies don't think that we're behind because we're not catching up to the PR story. So let's start off. Let's first tell people what the PR story is in case they hadn't heard it. What is the PR story that you've heard?
Well, the one that was more, the Crunchbase one was the first version. The second version was that it cost $1,000 and I was paid $10 an hour. I was paid slightly more than that hourly and quite a bit more than that
in total. And the story is that Kevin Rose found you on Elance, offered a few $100, I guess, for somebody to develop this idea of his. You responded and you built the site for $300.
Again, there's a slight grain of truth in that. I left a full-time job in 2000, went and worked in Europe for a while, and then the first dot-com bubble burst, and I came back to Canada, and I did work on Elance. I have a portfolio on Elance, and Kevin was one of my customers, but this all happened 2 years before Digg. And he actually referred me to a couple of other people who had actual budgets. Kevin didn't have much of a budget at that point. So I felt reasonably good about working with him when this project came up. The first words out of my mouth, actually, when he approached me about this is, you probably can't afford me now. And, I mean, looking back, I was pretty cheap anyway. It was $20 an hour I charged.
I see.
Originally.
And so the first year that, the first time you found him was what year?
It would have been 2002. He found me on Elance.
Okay, and he had
one of them was, it was a site called, I forget the name of the site, but it had to do with just detecting your IP address, you know, like IP chicken or what's my IP, that kind of thing. So I did a little work on that, which was really like half an hour's work or something. But it wasn't a big deal. But then, like I said, he referred me to a couple of his friends in San Francisco, and I did quite a bit of work for that. So I guess he got some good feedback from them. So in December 2004, he approached me about building Digg.
Okay, and so
what? Sorry, October 2004. We launched in December 2004.
Okay, what I'm hearing from you is that there were a few ideas. Kevin Rose was just a guy who had a bunch of ideas. He said,
right,
let's go to Elance, let's have somebody code them up. Some of them will hit, some of them will fail, but they're not going to cost me that much, right?
It was a bit more than that, too, because at that time, Kevin was working for G4 TV, which had taken over Tech TV, and there were layoffs happening there left and right. So I think he felt that he was about to be laid off, so he needed to find something some way to support himself if that did happen.
That's interesting. So, I feel that we're going through a similar situation right now where the economy's bad, people are getting laid off, and they're starting to think maybe that idea that they had for a business, now's the right time to do it.
Right. So I think that gave him a sense of urgency. Before that, the projects might have been just sort of fooling around on the side, trying stuff. But this one, I really had to make succeed.
Okay, so I want to get into Dig, but I really want to understand the mindset of an entrepreneur here, and especially the mindset of an entrepreneur in our environment today. He had an IP idea, a simple website that did something with IPs. That was one of his ideas. What other ideas was he kicking around? What kinds of ideas was he kicking around?
I can't actually remember any other ones.
Okay, so not that was... memorable, but small-scale apps, right?
Yeah.
I see. Okay, and... and then he comes to, and then he introduces you to other people because you've done good work for him. And then he finally says to you, I've got this idea that turns out to be Dig. What was it when he first introduced you to it?
I think the idea was originally inspired by not being able to get stories onto the front page of Slashdot. And what was, I think it was page 2 of one of the Mac websites where they put sort of the rest of the news, stuff that wasn't good enough to make the front page. So the idea was, you know, to go around the editors. George Bush's famous phrase, go above the filters.
Okay, now this is, I know for the people who are watching us here, I've got Michael DeRoush in the audience, I've got Heaton Shaw, one of the brains of our industry. They're all watching and they know what Slashdot is. But even for them, I want to just explain what Slashdot is and why Kevin Rose was so frustrated that he couldn't get his stories to the top of Slashdot and other sites like it. So what was Slashdot at the time?
Slashdot is a tech news website that publishes 10 to 20 stories a day, and people comment on it. There's editors. Users submit the stories to the editors. The editors decide what goes on the front page.
And if a story hits the front page, the website that it links to gets a tremendous amount of traffic, right?
Yeah.
But editors decide what goes to the front page, and editors decide who gets all that traffic, and that's what bothered Kevin Rose.
Yeah.
And that's not the PR story. I mean, you and I are here to dispel PR myths and get to the truth. So the PR story that most social networking sites and social news sites come up with is we're trying to democratize knowledge. It sounds like that's what they were doing, right?
That was the goal originally. He came to me with that idea.
How much of a profit motive was behind the way you guys were thinking?
Well, as I said, he was facing being laid off at his job. So I think he was concerned mostly about replacing that income.
I see. So how there was a goal to bring in revenue with the site.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So he comes to you. And
we have ads right from the start.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. We had Google ads right from the start.
Okay.
Just to try and learn about ad revenue and make money, I guess.
All right. So what was the I know how big and complicated the site is today with friends and interactions and digging up and voting down and keeping bad users off the site. Very involved. But what was it at its core? That's another thing that I keep talking about here at Mixergy. When you have a big idea, how do you come up with that core that you can launch and then build on? What was at the core when you guys launched?
It was a pretty simple site, just voting stuff up and burying people. And it really evolved over the first 8 months. I think it was a simple idea that we added a lot of stuff just to make it better. One of the big things was the appearance of this technique called Ajax. They didn't actually have that name for it when we first started using it, but that sort of came along right around the same time. And so I thought that was really cool, and we started using that all over the site.
And what Ajax did at the time, it was revolutionary. It made sites quicker. So you guys, more interactive, right? You didn't have to go to a whole new page in order to do it, for example.
Before, when we originally launched, when you clicked the Dig button, you actually loaded a new page that said, you have dug this story, and then had to click on a go back link. So very early on, we switched that and found out about this thing, which is called XML-HTTP at the time. You didn't have to leave the page. Click the Dig link, and wow, you're still on the same page. People thought that was cool at the time. And so we added quite a few other Ajax-type features over the next few months. And everybody thought those were cool. So,
But at the launch, it was users submit stories, users vote on stories, and there was an account to make sure that the stories that a user submitted and voted on were kept track of, right?
Actually, originally we had anonymous digging at the very beginning. You could dig without being logged on. But there, once you logged in, you had the advantage of a profile page, which would show what you had dug. And we didn't actually have comments at first. I can't remember when we actually added comments, but it was later on.
Okay, so right now, none of it seems that special to me, what you launched with. And it just seems like users submit pages, users vote them up. Did it take off from there?
Yeah, well, there was this sort of lucky event that we had. So, I mean, just to sort of quibble with you, if you look at Craigslist, if it didn't have the users, it wouldn't be very special either, right? So the real key is getting a critical mass of users. So some of that Kevin brought with him because he had a fan base, and we managed to get, you know, a few thousand users in the first couple of months. Then this thing happened, the Paris Hilton incident. I don't know if you've heard about this.
You're talking about the cell phone, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Sure. So Paris Hilton's cell phone was hacked, and someone took a bunch of topless pictures and lesbian kissing and celebrity phone numbers and put them on their website and then posted the link to Dig. This is in February 2005. And 2 days later, we were the number one, number three links on Yahoo for Paris Hilton's cell phone, and traffic just went through the roof, basically.
Wow.
So that was an interesting time for me because we were only on $199 a month server, and we didn't have the time or the money to really upgrade. So I had to optimize a lot, basically, that day and the days after. But that really sort of took us to another level in terms of you know, the network effect and the amount of users we had. And it just seemed to grow from there.
Guys, if you're watching us live and you have any feedback or any questions about where we're going so far, let me know. I want to make sure that I'm asking Owen the right questions, and I could use your help here to make sure that I'm getting you the information you need. So Paris Hilton's phone was hacked. A site called Gen May, I think, was the forum where people were first exposed to her information. Why did you guys show up at the top of search results? Why did you guys get all this traffic? Or was it anyone who had Paris Hilton affiliated?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I think, we probably had a certain amount of inbound links just from, maybe again, from the fact that Kevin had lots of friends and his friends all blogged about this new site called Dig. We also appeared on G4 TV on the screensavers when we first launched, so that might have helped generate initial blogging or something that gave us enough inbound links to show up there.
All right, Owen, a lot of what people say to me is that Dig only succeeded because Kevin Rose was a celebrity in the space. It seems like you're saying there's some truth to that, right?
Sure.
That it helps.
But it's not 100% of the truth. And I mean, I think a lot of it is just luck and timing, really.
You know, it's so frustrating for me when I talk to entrepreneurs like you who say luck, 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 because I'd like to bring back to people who are watching this program clear techniques that anyone can use and succeed at a big level.
Sure.
And the truth is, a lot of successful entrepreneurs will tell me here when they're honest, they say luck plays a role, and you're saying the same thing.
Well, the flip side of it, though, is luck is really probability, and probability means if you're persistent and keep trying, eventually the probability is you're going to succeed.
Good point. And here's a guy who just kept trying different ideas. You don't even remember how many ideas he tried and which ones they were, and one of them happened to hit. So you get more lucky if you take more swings at the bat.
Exactly.
Okay, so the site is up. It's bare bones. Did you feel when you launched it that you were onto something, or did you say, this is just another one of Kevin's ideas?
No, it grew pretty quickly, and I think we had a couple other things that sort of really help on your own. First of all, we had this target to shoot for, /dot. And sort of, if you have sort of an external enemy, it tends to focus the mind. And we had steady growth along with those the Paris Hilton moment. There were a few others later on, so we sort of were continually growing. Every day I'd go and see, you know, how many new registrations, and there'd been more new registrations than the day before, right? So.
And so you just keep seeing growth, and you know you're on to something.
Yeah. Though I will admit to having my doubts during the early days, because there was no revenue and there was no, this was the bottom of the, you know, the bubble had burst 3 years before. There was no Web 2.0 at the time. There were just people building websites. And so there was no clear path to getting rich.
All right. I see Johnny Farrell is watching us live and saying that I'm a little too quiet with my mic, so I've gotten a little closer to me, and I've got to keep working on ways to make my mic sound just as loud as the person I'm interviewing. So where did this come from, this idea that you built Dig for $300 or $1,000? Where did it come from?
I think just the PR agency, and they try and craft a story that'll capture the public's attention, I guess. So a 40-something-year-old programmer, probably they wanted to downplay that a little. So I think that's all. And to some extent, I took it too personally when it wasn't really meant to be insulting to me. It kind of was, but I don't think they really meant it that way. It's just whatever they can do to get space in the newspapers and blogs and
I see that a lot, and I think that's one of the hardest things when you're trying to build a business. If you're a scientist, if you're even a developer, you can go look at the real experience of other developers, their real work, and then learn from their real work and take that into your work. But as an entrepreneur, you can't go and study other entrepreneurs easily because they have to spin their story. And what you often will see is their PR story, their spin. And if you react just to that as an entrepreneur and build your business based on what you think they've done in their experience, you're going to build failure. And I got to be honest with you, when I heard your story, I was building a site and I kept going to my developers and saying, why is it that Owen can build a site for $300, $1,000 and you guys need more time and more money?
Right.
I feel like
Oh, well, that's the way it is. Spin is important too, obviously, though, right?
When you did you guys get a PR agency? When did you go from a kid who was just paying on Elance for a developer to help build his ideas to having a PR agency?
That would be the Series A. So we got a CEO and we got a VC company and we got a PR agency.
I see. And a lot of people think PR is fluff, but it sounds like the PR agency helped with Dig, right?
Sure, yeah. Though, well, I mean, I could quibble. By the time that Series A round came around, Jason Calacanis had offered to buy us, and we really had kind of huge momentum. We had upgraded to 3 servers, and it seemed like those 3 servers were instantly overloaded. Like there was people waiting to get on the site, and every time we sped up the loading of the site, more people had come. So it was really pent-up demand.
I see Kid Disco watching us live, and he's asking, was Dig originally built on an open source CMS content management system, or did you build it from scratch?
Built it from scratch. We used PHP, MySQL, LAMP. Very much a belief that, you know, custom code. Kevin had big ideas from the start, so we felt that in order to scale properly, we need to control the code ourselves.
Between the time that you were hired and the time that you guys got the Series A, the first round of real funding, how much work did you do? How did the site evolve?
I actually had other clients at the time, and I was quite busy with, like, it seemed just at the time Dig was taking off, my own particular small business in Canada, which is basically outsourcing, seemed to take off in parallel. So I was working like 85, 90 hours a week. But probably a third of that was actually for Dig.
So about 30 hours a week, almost a full-time developer. You were costing $20 an hour. Kevin Rose was nearly broke. How did he afford to pay you? Credit cards?
He had a fair amount of savings, and then we actually got an angel. He found an angel in San Diego to come up with a small amount of cash. And that's when we actually bought the 3 new servers. We went from 1 to 3 servers.
How did you find the angel?
Connections. There's a guy running a site called TextAmerica.com, and he threw in $50,000.
Wow. Okay, and what were you doing to the site? You told us that you added Ajax. Ajax at the time was new. It was kind of cool that you could click a page, and you could click a button, and the whole page wouldn't have to reload. What else did you do to the site?
Well, Kevin also hired a designer, also from Canada, Daniel Burka, still works there. So he came up with the design. Part of that design was just, you know, a whole additional page flow, so we had to map out all the different features. We added things like the Dig News widget that's there, you know, so you could have the Dig headlines on your blog or wherever. The Dig Spy was a big deal that I spent quite a bit of time at that point. It was an Ajax real-time-ish view of the site. That was quite popular. And the new design basically inspired a whole new set of features around it, basically. So, and that launched in July 2005.
So I see a lot of sites build out quickly some kind of badge or something that, or widget that others can take their content, put it on the website, and help promote. That's why you guys did it. Did it help with promotion?
I think so. It certainly helps with SEO, too. So.
Because you have all those people linking back to you.
Right.
What kind of things did you guys do with search engine optimization? You now
not very much, actually, because we didn't really have to. Things just sort of took off, and we always ranked pretty highly with Google and Yahoo, and about all I did at one point was mostly because people complained to me as I made the pages validate. All right, that was about it.
What do you mean you made the pages validate?
Validate as valid XHTML.
I see.
So cleaned up the code, made sure it passed a validator, makes it easier to parse for search engines.
All right, let's see what questions we're getting from people here. Well, actually, let me ask my own question here. When I interviewed Ted, founder of Dogster, he said that as soon as he launched Dogster, it kind of took off. He did, his girlfriend, now wife, posted about it on Craigslist pet section, and from there, it just really took off, and the site had its own legs, it seemed. You're telling me the same thing happened here at Dig, right?
Right.
And
pretty well. Like I said, it grew about, so there were a few thousand people came on board immediately, like as part of the beta testing, part of the appearance on the screensavers. And then after that, it grew about 20% every month, pretty steadily, except for like when Paris Hilton happened, traffic like tripled there. When we launched the new, when we got that angel investment, part of that was doing a deal where our badges would appear on Text America's site. Text America had significantly more traffic than we did at the time, so that was another big traffic event. And then in July 2005, when we launched version 2, we got another big jump in our traffic from that. So steady growth combined with sort of these big steps in traffic based on, you know, partially on external events, partially on us adding features.
Why did the new version help with traffic?
It looked a lot nicer. It was cool. You know, it had these cool new features like Dig Spy, and we had for the news badge, we created sort of a thing where you could customize it, various colors, select from different categories, and that had an Ajax preview, of course, so you could actually see what it would look like on your site as you were creating it. So that was, you know, new features, basically, are what drove that. Plus, the design was much nicer. You know, it just looked cool.
Hey, Kevin Rose has got a zillion followers on Twitter. You're in the hundreds. And first of all, by the way, if you guys are watching live, please tweet that we're on. Owen needs a little – I believe Owen needs more credit and more attention for being the co-founder and the guy who did the real work, I'm going to say. I don't want to put down Kevin Rose's work in this, but you did the hard work here. You actually coded it up. So please tweet out about this. Tweet out about Owen. Let people know that he is the co-founder of Dig.
I did other stuff too. I did.
There you go.
You know, user support.
That makes it even more impressive that you were doing other things while you built one of the biggest sites in the world. Sites that other people would only kill to be on the home page of, never mind owning or being a part of and owning shares of. We'll ask you about shares of that. But what I'd like to know now is he's got all these people following him on Dig. He's going out with celebrities everywhere. He's a celebrity in his own right, right? The guy's got women all over the place. I'm looking behind you. I don't see women behind you. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of Kevin Rose without a team of women behind him. Does that frustrate you on a human level?
Yeah, for sure. But to some extent, I knew it was going to happen. Obviously, I couldn't be the face of the company. It wouldn't have succeeded as well. So I've learned to live with it. I'm not a rock star.
Talk about that. Let me tell you this, that in my worst moments as an entrepreneur, I remember sleepwalking through my days saying, why didn't I – why didn't I sell for $170 million? Why didn't I take that? There, we go through these moments in business. Can you talk about the human side of this? How you felt when Kevin was getting all this attention?
Sure. It kind of bothered me, but I guess the point you have to make to yourself is, you know, where was I 2 years ago and where am I now? Right? And I'm comparatively better off, not compared to Kevin. Like, he's obviously had a significantly larger, he's done better. But I've done pretty well myself, too. I have a good job and get to do cool stuff, get paid well, have cool toys.
Are you getting Silicon Valley, I can't believe I'm about to say this, girls from Silicon Valley? I don't even know that there are that many girls to be had. There aren't starlets.
I'm not even in Silicon Valley anymore. I'm back in Canada.
So, yeah, you're in Canada. Are you married? Are you dating?
Not right at the moment, no.
All right. I wish I had women in my audience. I'm looking now.
I sit in front of a computer for 15 hours a day, so.
All right. Let's go back into questions, and then maybe I'll pick this up again and find out who else Owen is dating. And Owen, if this is a little too personal, you let me know. Slap me
back.
All right. Let's see. Alex is asking. Alex, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name right. Alex Howell on Twitter is asking, Is it a good idea to release early and update over time? Is that what you guys did? Do you find that that's the way?
Yeah, that was 2004, though. I think the barrier to entry has increased since that time. Like I said, that was really at the low point after the bubble burst. So it was really easy to release something unpolished and get noticed, whereas now the noise level is significantly higher. So you really have to have a better design, spend a little more time in getting that initial version out there. But I think that's, you know, it really depends on the economic cycle. And that may be why they say, you know, you hear all the time, best time to start a business is in the recession. I think that's a lot of it. There's just less noise. It's easier to get noticed.
Talk about that. How did the recession play a part in this, in the growth of Digg?
I guess not so much the recession, is just the web industry itself had sort of collapsed, right? So it seemed like for 2-3 years there was no real innovation happening. And then all of a sudden there was this whole web 2.0 standards-based, you know, the standards had improved. So if you're in any way, you know, concerned about usability and making a site that attracted users that was different from the ones that had survived the 1.0, then it was possible to get attention.
And I think that we're going to go through a similar situation now where there are going to be lots of opportunities because people are starting to get discouraged. They're saying, my website didn't take off overnight. I'm leaving this whole internet thing. I'm going to go do something else. Now's the time to jump in, right?
Yeah, I'd say so, actually.
Why aren't you starting your own business, Owen? Why aren't you creating?
I have a good job, and I built actually this cool project for TripAdvisor that attracted me. You know, it attracted me, and for the last 8 months I've been working pretty hard on that.
All right, I'm gonna ask you a little bit about what you're working on now. I love TripAdvisor. Uh-huh. And I saw the page that you're working on. Let me take more questions. Johnny Farrell is actually picking up the level of conversation. Thank you, Johnny. He's asking a tech question. He's saying, would Owen use LAMP again? Did Owen look at different technology like ROR, ASP.NET?
I certainly didn't look at .NET. I'm not sure that Rails was mature enough at the point in December 2004. We decided on PHP and LAMP just because it was easy to deploy, and I, at that time, had experience in it. Again, at this current project that I'm working on, we use PHP again just because of one particular developer who was very good at that language that we were able to get working for us. So I'm not really religious about technology. I think it's more important to work with the people that you have. And if they have skills in a particular area, you need to sort of leverage those skills. But I like Django. And we use jQuery a lot at my current job, and we use it a lot at the last job. JavaScript is a big deal these days. So people talk a lot about server-side technology, but it really isn't all that important anymore. JavaScript and client-side technology is more important, in my opinion.
And in your case, having more of the action happen on the user side made it more fun. Helped on the business side too.
Yeah. Having a lot more interactivity in the whole Ajax and cool effects and stuff makes for a better experience you know, what they call rich internet applications these days. That's really where the trend is, to a more interactive web page. In the old days, you just had, you know, fill in a form, click a button, something happens. That's kind of passe now. So,
let's see, another question from John E. Farrell. He's saying, did Digg's new features or design come from user feedback? What was the feedback mechanism in the early days?
We had email from users nearly constantly. They suggest a lot of features. When it was just Kevin and I, we just sort of back and forth different features. He'd suggest something. I tell him why it sucks or why, that'd be easy to do. Let's do that and try it out. And if something was more difficult, we might try and get more feedback before proceeding on it. So if something was very complex, you'd really try and make sure that users really wanted it and that it actually have an advantageous effect on the site.
How would you know before you developed if users really wanted it? Did you blog it? Did you do something else?
Yeah, we actually posted stories on Digg. We had, I forget what we called it, but there was a mechanism where Kevin could post stories, right, in Digg, not on a separate blog or anything. But we had a category. It was called Digg News, right? So we had a category in the original Digg called Digg News. And we posted there and asked for, you know, more input.
He's an idea minute guy. I know that that developers have trouble with idea minute guys. How did you work that out?
Well, like I said, I'd tell him that idea sucked, and then he'd defend it. Or I'd tell him, oh, that's a good idea, and I can probably do it pretty quickly, or it might work better this way, you know, just slight change. We had, in the early days, we had a really good back and forth sort of conversation going, so which is weird, because we were actually, in case you didn't know, we were 4,000 miles apart. This was all done. I never met Kevin until August 2005, so we were 9 months in before I met him.
So you were just virtual, you were on Skype on your computers?
Yeah. Wow. Not so much Skype. I don't think I ever saw him in video at that point either. AIM mostly is what we did, AIM and email.
Just chatting back and forth, and that's how you were able to build a site?
Yeah.
So then how did you resolve these issues? It's one thing for him to come up with an idea and you to say it sucks, but did you have a system for figuring out what made sense and what didn't? Did you just run it? Did you do what Google does and test, and let the data speak for itself?
No, we just built stuff and somehow it all succeeded. I mostly would defer to him in the end. Like I'd say, this sucks. And then I'd say, okay, I'll do it. We'll try it. Right. If there was a disagreement kind of thing.
I see. And at the end of the day, it's got to be, especially in the early days when you don't have a lot of user feedback. It's just the visionary.
Yeah, maybe. But like I said, we had a lot of users right from the start. We had a few thousand users almost immediately and probably 20,000 users by month three. So we had lots of user feedback. And also, they weren't your run-of-the-mill users. They were kind of vocal in what they wanted. And
user feedback was pretty important.
They were. So, for instance, the whole thing about validating pages, you know, I didn't really think that was all that important back then, but people kept telling me, oh, it's important. So eventually I just did it. Made it work. And now I agree, it's important. So
let's take a few more questions from people who are watching us live. Pratik Dayal, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. He's asking, how big was the team when or before you got your Series A? Was it just the two of you guys?
No, we added a couple more people. Ron Gordetsky was a system administrator, so he'd basically do, you know, behind-the-scenes sysadmin. And then, as I said, we hired this design firm, and Daniel Burka came on board to give us some more professional design, though he was working at an external company at that point. So there were four of us, and then we got the CEO, and then right after that we got funding.
I've got questions here from – was anyone full-time, or were you all 1099, as they say, in the U.S., contractors?
No, nobody was full-time. We're all contractors.
Wow. Let's go through more questions over here. Step Dow, I don't understand your question. You want to know about how to scale? You're saying scale is huge. Can you explain that? Jay.
Yeah, I know him personally, Step Dow.
Oh, you do? How do you know him? Who is he?
He actually interviewed for us at Digg at one point, and he lives in Montreal, which is about a 2-hour drive from where I live in Canada. So I've had lunch with him, or I've had beers with him. So.
And did you guys turn him down?
He wouldn't move to California. I see. So it didn't work out for that reason.
Okay, let's see. What else do we have? Andy Warner, who's watching us, guy who has the same name as me, he's saying, Andrew, girls from Silicon Valley, is that possible? Yes, it is.
There's attractive women in California, that's for sure.
Okay, why did you leave? You were in one of the hottest startups. Why?
Sure, because I was still a programmer. And basically, there were more and more levels of management appearing between me and Kevin and Jay, the CEO, and kind of got on my nerves, wanted to do something new, wanted to do my own thing. Fortunately, it's hard to do your own thing in California when you're a Canadian on a TN visa. So I got deported. Like, I wasn't actually forced out, I was told to leave, and I left when told, right? So there wasn't, but I guess the technical term is deported. And then they wouldn't let me back in, various reasons. So they eventually, someone at the border told me, why can't you get a job in Canada? So I did.
Wow. I would have thought that there'd be a way to keep you. You're a critical part of this business.
Well, I left the company.
Oh, right? I see. Right. And then you went off on your own. I'm doing too many things here at once. I told you before we got started, Charlie Rose never has to look at tweets, keep the technology going, and do his interview. No wonder he's good.
Well, that's what you call innovation, right? How much longer will we have TV?
All right, let's see. So what would you have done differently than you guys? Along the way, what would you have done differently?
There's some legal things I might have done differently, but I don't really want to talk about those too much.
They're maybe get a bigger share of the business or protect your...
Well, there's one particular clause I might have... insisted on liquidation preferences.
I see. You have shares though, right?
I do.
Can you say how many?
Less than 10%.
Less than 10, more than 5%?
Less than 5% now. Originally it was more, it was between 5 and 10%. Now it's less than 5%.
Wow, that's pretty damn good. Can we say over
5%? I'm not exactly sure.
So let's say give or take 3% of a company like Digg, it's not as good as owning 30%, which is what I think you should be entitled to considering all the work you put in.
Well, no, Kevin took all the risks monetarily. I was happy with my original share. It's just, like I said, liquidation preferences.
I keep pushing. I want to see how much I could get. What are liquidation preferences?
It means, you can Google it. I don't want to go down this path too much because start getting pissed off and...
You will personally start getting pissed off, you mean?
Yeah.
All right. Okay, I told you in the beginning of this interview that I won't push where you're not comfortable going, and I'm going to stick to that.
Sure.
All right. Let's see. What else do we want to know? Oh, the people who started gaming Digg, who realized that if they got their stories to the top of Digg, their sites would take off. When did these guys start to really take over the site?
Probably right around the time we got our Series A was when that really started to happen. Just because I think you get some publicity from that, suddenly you're in TechCrunch with funding announcement. And so the kind of people who read those blogs became aware that there was such a thing as the Digg effect. And I think that's really when it started to happen. So mid-2005, mid to late 2005.
And what'd you do to keep them from taking over the site completely? There were guys like, go ahead, sorry.
There are a whole bunch of mechanisms behind the scenes that, again, is sort of confidential.
You can't really talk about even the early days and the things you did?
Not really.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So we got Merrick is saying, Kevin sold his shares for cash. Owen was not allowed to cash out. Oh, right. Merrick, you asked that before. How'd you feel about that? You couldn't take cash
out? Well, that's what I was talking about.
I see. There's the part that I should have caught on to quicker. I think that I know the business side of business, but you guys toss around things like liquidation preferences. I never had to deal with getting funding, and I'm lost. Thank you, Merrick, for getting us back up to speed on this. And I'm sorry, Owen, for bringing back a subject that you're not comfortable talking about.
Oh, that's okay. I'm actually more comfortable with it now than I was when I left because I've managed to do some, well, some stuff behind the scenes with my shares that make me a little more comfortable with it financially.
What do you mean?
No cash yet, but oh, I can't really talk about this either. But I am, just say that I am more comfortable with owning some shares in Dig.
All right. So what are you doing now? You went to work on at a company that's now doing work for TripAdvisor, right?
Sure. I work at Travel Cloud Labs, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of TripAdvisor up here in Ottawa, Canada. And I basically came on board because they had a cool project, which was basically to build a site to compete with kayak.com, which is a meta search for travel fares. So it gets fares from a whole variety of different sites, aggregates them, presents them in a nice interface with filters so you can filter out, I don't want to leave before 9 a.m. in the morning, I don't want to arrive home after 8 at night, that kind of thing. So it was a really interesting project technically and also business-wise because we are in sort of a head-to-head competition with Kayak, which is a pretty well-funded company. So,
but you have the advantage of being with TripAdvisor. TripAdvisor is one of the most popular sites online, right?
Sure.
Anytime
yeah.
I do a search for a hotel, they come up at the top of the search results, and their user contributed, user written reviews are phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I didn't actually know too much that we were involved with TripAdvisor. I just because when they interviewed me, this was sort of confidential, but I knew it was going to be a cool project. And so that's sort of what got me on board. Plus, I needed a job for the people at the border to let me back into the U.S. Right? So I can now travel freely to the U.S. where I couldn't before I actually took this job.
And you're still back in Canada. You're mostly working remotely.
Well, we have an office here, right? So we have several engineers here. We have some engineers in Boston that are part of our team. And that's basically it. We built this project, launched it. I got a little bit of, I got a brief mention in the Boston Globe. This former member of the Dig team is involved with this project, so that was kind of nice. And it, you know.
What was it about this project that drew you in? Because the way that I'm hearing it right now, it's just a Me Too product that competes with Kayak. But that's
yeah, that's what Dig started out to some extent. It was just a Me Too product competing with Slashdot, right? So I've always liked that idea from technological sort of business approach, which is what Bill Gates used to call the fast follow approach, where you take a successful product and you just tweak it a bit and you do it better. And I like that strategy. You know,
just fast follower, but the fast follower eventually has to innovate some way, right?
Sure.
What are you guys going to do to innovate?
Well, I think we already have innovated, and from a business point of view, we have a lot more sources of flights because we're part of TripAdvisor, in case you didn't know, is actually owned by Expedia. So we immediately got access to all of Expedia's flight inventory, and we also cut some deals with a whole bunch of other airlines. So we actually have more data than Kayak. But I think we also have a more interesting product in that we're more interactive. We have a better selection of filters to let you choose which flights you want. The site is very heavy JavaScript. It's very front-end interactive. So I think we're actually better than Kayak already. And we did that with 5 engineers, and they have 30. So, and they have $160 million in funding, and our budget wasn't anywhere near that.
I love hearing stories of people who are smaller in size, who have uh-huh. less money, who are still taking on the big guys and making a dent in their business and building a bigger business. You guys aren't exactly the little guys, but you're smaller in this case.
Yeah, we're a small little unit within a giant entity. You know, they have that whole idea of entrepreneurship. So we were created really, we're a labs group in here, and we're part of this slightly larger group in Boston called the New Initiatives Group. And we're totally separate, you know, from the rest of TripAdvisor and the rest of Expedia. So it was that kind of entrepreneurship thing.
To create the kind of environment that you only get in entrepreneurship, right?
Right.
Because that spurs innovation. It keeps you guys fighting. You take pride in being a 5-man operation that's taking on a 30-man operation.
Yeah. That's just engineers now. Those also, we have a few managers. They have a lot of managers in Salesforce and stuff. So. Group here is 10, and I think, I'm not sure what Kayak has for total number of employees, but
Mike Paulus, before we got started, when I announced that I was going to interview you, he said,
"Yeah,
you know him too?"
I do, actually.
He says, "How are you keeping up with the young, what he calls young whippersnappers?"
Yeah, I'm.
Technologically, everyone who's coding up these sites is a young 20-something-year-old. Here you are, you're an older guy. How are you keeping up?
Well, you know, the second programmer we hired was actually older than me, right? So I think it's a bit of a myth that it's all young coders. There's actually lots of people in their late 30s and their 40s. And it's because they, you know, I've been a programmer for 25 years, and I've actually worked hard to try and keep up with new technology. You talked about girlfriends and wives and stuff. I think I maybe sacrificed some of that just so I could spend nights in front of the computer and learn new things. So, you know, that you just have to work harder than other people, maybe sacrifice a little. You know, the thing I think is, you know, I was really excited about the internet right from the start, right? From used to download files via FTP in the early 90s. And so in a sense, I've sort of been an internet native right from when the internet came along. And I'm enthusiastic about it. I still am.
You still read all those O'Reilly books. You're still
testing
out new technology on your own.
Sure. I have. Actually, it's in the other room, but I have a bookshelf full of books.
Every developer has got a bookcase
full of books. Two giant monitors to the right here that you can't see. And like about six computers.
Will Jessup was saying, Will Jessup runs a company called Citrus Byte. It's a Ruby shop here in Southern California. And he made... When I announced this, he said that a great product manager is the key, that a great product manager can even guide a team of crappy engineers. Is that your experience too?
Yeah, I don't know if we ever had a great product manager. We just had Kevin and I, and maybe between the two of us, we made sort of a great product manager because he didn't really have a lot of technical knowledge, but he knew what he liked, and I think I had a fair amount of technical knowledge, and between the back and forth, I think it worked really well.
Hey, what was going to be in that book that you were threatening to write about Big?
Well, just what I'm talking about here.
Expanded. So you're giving me away for free what you were going to say in that book.
Well, in more in depth. I'm actually giving a keynote speech at a conference in Amsterdam. I don't know if you knew that.
I saw it on your website.
So I'm preparing for that too and getting more stuff down on paper. Been too damn busy to write a book.
Well, what's your juicy story that in the back of your head you can't wait to write? Maybe you can think it through here with us.
I don't think I can.
How about a less juicy story, but one that you're working on that you want to just...
Well, the one that's already come up that sort of pissed me off was the Kevin cashing out and me not cashing out. And just the fact that I exist, you know? And that I was there from the start.
You're getting credit on their website, right? They're calling you a co-founder?
No.
They're not.
I don't think you'll find a mention of me anywhere on Dig.
I found a couple of old blog posts.
Yeah, originally just because I was sort of a pain in the ass about it. And Kevin was reasonably willing to give me some credit. It was just some of the other people who came along later that didn't. So early on, yeah, I got mentioned as co-founder. But I don't think you'll find too much mention of me. Say, if you look on the About page, I'm not mentioned there.
Wow. You're just the guy they found on Elance for $1,000.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. You know what? You could have actually gone off and found another co-founder and, because of your experience at Dig, gotten funding for another business. Why didn't you do that?
Well, I was going to do that. That was the plan in California. And like I said, the Border Patrol, the immigration people, they don't really like that idea if you're not actually an American.
Do you have to be in America to get a business funded? Is it hard?
Well, it's certainly a lot easier in Northern California.
And they wouldn't have funded you and helped you get in the country.
Yeah, maybe. The plan was, I really liked the idea of bootstrapping. That's what worked for Dig, and that's what really allowed Kevin and myself to really keep more of the equity than we would have if we'd taken funding earlier on. So if you can bootstrap and get it to a certain point before you... I mean, when we actually looked at getting funding, it was a bit of a feeding frenzy, right? Because we already had this momentum. And so they were able to, Kevin and Jay, our CEO, were able to get pretty good terms just because we had bootstrapped and built the thing up from the ground before getting significant funding.
Let's see what else we got here. Oh, competitors. Again, Johnny Farrell. Guys, let's get more questions. I don't want to give Johnny Farrell monopoly over the questions here, but he's asking good questions. What do you think about Reddit.com and the other competition? Is Reddit specifically better, worse, copycat, lame?
Well, you know, I hang out a lot on Hacker News, so that's really a dig descendant, I like to call it. And I've never really much used Reddit. They try to say that they came up with the idea independently, which, yeah, that seems like more PR BS there. But I have no problem. I sort of regret never actually meeting the Reddit guys. But, see, you know, they've done well. And maybe, again, when I'm talking about bootstrapping, the founders of Reddit might have done better financially simply because they went straight from bootstrapping to acquisition, right? They took a little bit of money from Paul Graham, but
yeah,
it was a different. It was a model that I might actually have preferred, rather than the giant VC-funded, huge growth kind of thing.
Why? So, why is it so bad to get VC funding and grow? I agree with you. I just want to have
because you get diluted. There's more risk to the founders, whereas, as a phrase I used to say at Dig and Meeting, smaller, sooner, more certain. You know, that was sort of the Reddit approach, and that might have been better for me.
But for Kevin Rose, for the founder who gets to keep more of the shares, who has more of a more control over the direction, is it better, do you think, in your experience, to get funding to build this thing out and blow it up and make it as big as possible?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think, maybe for Kevin Rose, because beyond being a founder, he had the connections to the people, to the person who became our CEO. So it may have been a better approach for him the way we went. But for me, I would have preferred the Reddit-type approach.
And that might have
to do with, you know, he's 31 and I'm 40-something. So.
And you want the cash sooner instead of waiting.
Yeah, though I probably would have just done another business.
Is Kevin running the business on a day-to-day basis, or is it really Jay that's running the business? Kevin comes out with ideas, but mostly he spends his day on Twitter and dating celebrities.
I'd say he does slightly more work than you're suggesting in the second alternative there, but I don't think he's too much involved in the day-to-day running of the company.
Is he a PR? No, he
does work on features. With the designers and, you know, approves, or at least when I was there, he approves screenshots and is involved in that. I'm not sure how much he's involved in the deal making and the financial management of the things, but not very much, I'd say.
How much did doing Dig Nation, the show where he and Alex talk about what's on Dig, how much did that help their business?
That helped a lot.
How?
I think it created more buzz when they started doing that. They started around June 2005, and it attracted a whole additional audience to the site.
All right, we're getting ready to wrap up, so if you have any questions, please ask them now. And a question that keeps coming up is, and most recently from Law Twist here, who's watching us live, is legal work, legal advice, legal work. Specifically, a few people asked about what contract did you use with Dig when they hired you?
There was not a lot of legal work early on. It was actually at the Series A that all that was done, when we could actually afford lawyers. There was just an NDA, basically. I had no real contract. I just quoted Kevin a rate, and he paid it every month or so, and that was it.
Just straight from his savings, a guy who was willing to risk his savings, his life savings, on this business.
Yeah. Well, like I said, he was going to lose his job, so he took a gamble, and more power to him for that, I guess.
A lot of people are going to lose their job today. They're not going out to start a business. They're going out to try to find another job. So there's something admirable in that.
Well, you know, that's what I was doing before this all started. I was deep in the... I actually quit my job in 2000, so I was 4 years into trying to build this outsourcing business, and it was really not going very well in 2000, 2003. But in 2004, like I said, right around the time this happened, it kind of took off. So it's a viable alternative.
Let me steal a line from Jason Calacanis and ask people who are watching us live to please rate the show. What do you think? Give me your feedback on how we're doing. This is the way I get feedback from people. I don't have a clever system here. But I'd love to hear from you guys. Chris Winfield, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're watching us. I love Chris Winfield. He did an interview here. What did you learn from this? What did you take away from this experience?
From Dig, you mean?
Yes,
in general?
From Dig specifically. From being close to one of the biggest, from being in one of the biggest sites, from creating one of the top sites in history.
Right. Well, like I said, I've been sort of struggling at the time, so it's kind of, you know, it felt a bit like the person who'd been playing clubs for 20 years and then become sort of an overnight star. So persistence is important, I guess is my point, that even when things seem really crappy and there's no hope of things improving, all of a sudden they will, and sometimes it happens just like that.
You were at a point where things looked so crappy that it looked like they weren't going to turn around?
For me, like I said, I've been doing this sort of attempt.
Yeah, you personally, when? What was that like for you?
I was competing, you know, at first on Elance against people in Bangalore and Kiev and whatever that had much lower cost of living. So it was very difficult around 2003, 2004, I started to build up steady clientele. And I was actually, you know, at that point, I was doing well enough that I thought of not when the time came to I was offered a job in California at Dig. I really had to think about it because I was doing very well and I could have leveraged off the fact that I had built Dig to go out and get more clientele. And so it just sort of instantly happened in like fall of 2004 that my business and my income and my lifestyle went from crappy to much, much better. And it's continued to do that.
All right. So, before we end, I want to get a good clip with you saying it without me interrupting. I'll ask you what the PR story is behind Dig, and then I'll ask you what the real story is. And we'll just get that clearly out for entrepreneurs to see the difference in the two stories. Owen, what's the PR story behind Dig?
Okay, the PR story was that I built Dig for Kevin. Kevin Rose found me on Elance and hired me for $10 an hour and paid me either $200 or $1,000, depending on who you believe, to build the site. The actual story, it was a significantly larger amount, and there was equity involved. So, and that's it.
And the story was created by, you think?
I assume by public relations people working for Dig.
All right. Well, is there anything that I missed? Any questions I should have asked you?
No, that sounds good.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for doing this.
I know what I should do. Just show off my T-shirt. This is what I work for, TravelPod. Okay, and tripadvisor.com/flights. Try it early.
Please, people, add Owen on Twitter. Start tweeting now if you're watching that Owen is the co-founder. You don't even have to tweet out that he's the co-founder of Dig. People know it. It's online. Just let's give him some props. Let's give the developer, the guy who's behind the scenes, who's actually building up the business, let's give him a little bit of credit. I'm not saying he's got to be dating as many women as Kevin Rose and out there on television and everywhere else, but let's give the guy who built it, who did so much hard work, some credit. Thank you all for tweeting this. Thank you all for watching. Owen, thank you. And I'll see you guys all right here on Mixergy.
Thanks very much.
Thanks. All right, and there's the interview. Thank you for watching. I always get to meet incredible, smart people when I ask for feedback, and so I'll do it right now. Give me your feedback. What'd you think of this interview? Did I miss anything? Were there questions I should have asked? Did you sit there at home or listen to it while you're running and say, I wish Andrew asked this question or pushed that point or got me this piece of knowledge? Tell me, because I'm going to be doing these interviews for a long time, and the more information you feed me about what you need, the better my interviews can be for you. Also, did we cover ideas that you can actually use that have a basis in reality and are practical? That's one of my goals. I don't just want to be entertaining. I want to get to information you can use, and I'd love your feedback on that. Finally, just reach out and say hi to me. If you're somebody who watched this full interview all the way through, I know you're the kind of ambitious person who I want to meet. I know how many episodes of The Simpsons you could have watched instead of watching this. I know how many, Britney Spears albums you could have listened to this if you decided to listen to this. How many Britney Spears albums you could have listened to instead of this. You committed yourself to learning about business, and you're the kind of person then that I'd like to get to know. So find a way to reach out to me. There are lots of different ways on Mixergy.com. I hope you pick the one that you prefer and say hi. Thank you for watching, and I look forward to hearing from you.